Staging, our friends at NFB, and a few of the SILs, including ARI and the Image Center, on a project we called Inclusive Transportation Planning. So we've spent the last 2 or 2.5 years since Baltimore Link working together to try to find actionable ways forward on a lot of these efforts. And this isn't just a discussion, it's an action item list. It's holding one another accountable and it's seeing things change. You heard Ranza earlier mention wayfinding. We had a very successful wayfinding workshop that we were able to respond directly to people's needs and people's wants. We were able to take feedback, make change, and install wayfinding, bringing back the same folks who joined us the first time around to really experience both visual and tactile wayfinding. Now, why am I talking about all this? This is an example of how we are working with our communities to make sure that these processes are as inclusive as possible. And this has influenced the way we approach the legislatively mandated and really cool and really important Central Maryland Regional Transit. So I've gone ahead and spoken far too much already. I'm sure you guys are pretty bored, but there's someone who's way smarter and way more fun than me who's about to start talking if I can figure out how to unmute him. So I'd like to introduce my colleague, Teddy Krolik, who is the Chief of Engagement at MTA. So join me in welcoming Teddy. Thank you.
Thanks, Jamie. Can everybody hear me okay?
A little louder would be great.
A little bit louder, okay. So I also know that this presentation that I'm giving today is based on a PowerPoint presentation that we've given a few times over the last couple of weeks that Jamie has also converted into a screen reader accessible version. We've shared that with Ranza and with Anil, so I don't know if that's something that's been distributed already or if it'll be distributed after we speak, but again, everything that we're talking about today is on a screen reader accessible document, and it's one example of how we're trying to learn along with, as Jamie was mentioning, a few other projects, how we can make our work both more accessible and inclusive and frankly more functional. So if people do have the presentation, again, I'm not sure if you do or not, I'm going to start now and I'm going to give a background on the Central Maryland Regional Transit Plan. So is everybody on board with me so far? I know a lot of people are muted, so I'll just take that as a yes. So this project, this regional transit plan, comes not because MTA decided this was a good idea, not because the city of Baltimore or Harford County, but because actually the state legislature decided that it was important to have a 25-year vision plan for the entire Central Maryland region. And they went ahead and defined what that region includes. So that's Harford County, Baltimore City, Howard County, and Anne Arundel County. That means that yes, Carroll County is not included. Yes, Montgomery County and PG County are not explicitly included in this plan. So that means that while there are going to be some impacts on neighboring counties, if you do live in one of those unnamed counties besides the five that I mentioned, this plan specifically is not targeted at you. And if you think that that's a mistake, that's fine. You can get in touch with the legislature who sets the rules. And this plan is something that gets updated every 5 years. So we can have a chance to get another crack at it. And you can have perhaps more influence again on how transit works in Maryland. So this is a project that has been going on for about since really winter 2019. And so this represents kind of the home stretch. Today, we're going to actually have some draft plan text to go over. Before, let's say a couple weeks ago, we could only talk about kind of analysis and abstract concepts. Today, we actually have something that you guys can respond to. So this plan is looking at things like buses and trains, but it's also realizing that we are traveling in different ways than we used to. So a couple years ago, you probably weren't thinking so much about scooters or about TNCs, those are transportation network companies like Uber or Lyft. Who knows where we're gonna be in another 5 or 10 years. And so this is a map for us to think about how we can be prepared, but also have some adaptable plans for the future. And this includes looking at Maryland Department of Transportation provided service through MTA, but also our locally operated transit services like RTA in Columbia and Hartford Link in Hartford County, and of course, paratransit providers. So from there, I'm going to move on to an overview of the actual plan structure. So it's divided into three different pieces. One are some overarching goals. And so those are optimize existing transit services. That's number one. Number two is improve connectivity and integration of existing and future transit services. That's number two. And then number three is enhance fiscal sustainability. Each of these goals is then supported by a range of objectives. I'm going to read those objectives now, which are number one, provide faster, more reliable service. Number two, grow ridership. Number three, increase access to jobs and opportunities. Number four, improve the customer experience. Number five, be equitable. And number six, prepare for the future. Inside of each of those objectives, we have a few different kinds of strategies that can help support each. And I'm going to go into some more detail about those strategies, and in particular, the strategies that we think might be most relevant for the audience tonight. In addition to the strategies, we also have transit network improvements and regional transit corridors. Those are a little bit heavier to get into. They're also a little bit more visually kind of focused. So I'm going to describe them as best as we can, but those are examples where we're talking about putting in physical infrastructure to support connections between different job centers and activity centers, and also ways that we can improve current service. So thinking about how we can put in perhaps better shelters, better crossings, better transit-oriented development. So I'll get into those as we get further into this presentation. Now I'm going to move on to the next slide, where I'm going to go over some of the first strategies under the objective of be equitable. We think that some of these strategies are ones that would be interesting to this group, and we already have actually had some really great discussion a week or two ago with some other stakeholders, including some of the SILs and their representatives. So again, we are open to improving already. You'll see exactly some examples where we've already started to do that. So under this first objective of be equitable, the first strategy that I've pulled out here is improve trip scheduling. The second is incorporate disability sensitivity training for frontline transit employees. And I'll have some more to talk about on that later. The third strategy is ensure there is good transit service to grocery stores, medical facilities, and educational institutions. The fourth strategy is synchronize paratransit span of service with local bus service. For the disability sensitivity training, that's actually something where Jamie's also helped to convert what is an internal training document for our MTA operators, both on bus and light rail, all modes, for them to understand what their obligations and responsibilities are when it comes to the ADA and how to treat passengers. She's gone ahead and actually made that into a screen reader accessible document that we'll also be sharing with our partners at the SILs to get some more feedback on how we're doing. I think that that's an important thing that we've been really, I think, doing a good job of, which is when we work on something, we actually give it over for some comments and then improve on it after a round of edits. And so recognizing that our first attempt might not include everything that it needs to, how it can be improved upon subsequent revisions. So these are, again, some objectives and strategies that I think will be important for this group to discuss. I'm going to try to go through the rest of the presentation so that we can open it up for questions afterwards. But again, recognizing that these are probably going to be some of the more interesting strategies. This is a very long document in total. I think it's close to about 60 pages. So there is a lot to sink into.
And I'll jump in for a brief moment. This is Jamie. I do encourage you to review the strategies that are made available on the website. While Teddy and I will be providing a brief overview, we aren't going to be able to cover it all. And there's a lot of important information in there that's relevant to this group. So if you do have a moment or two tomorrow to do a quick read through and provide comment, that would be greatly appreciated.
And again, the plan document itself is available for, I think we have it on Word documents available for screen reader reading. And we also have some Spanish language translations. And we also now have, of course, tomorrow is going to be, I'll get to this at the end, but tomorrow is going to be kind of the big Regional Transit Plan Commission meeting where we discuss the plan for the first time in a public setting. And we have already posted the presentation materials on the website, which includes screen reader accessible presentations. So I just covered a few examples of some of the strategies leading into the Be Equitable objective. Next, I'm going to talk about, again, those transit network improvements, where we're expanding or enhancing current or previous investments. So some examples could be expanding existing or new fixed route service. It could be development of small area plans or shared mobility or micro transit studies. It could be improvements to existing rail corridors or creation and enhancement of transit hubs. And those are all slightly different than what we're considering regional transit corridors. So again, the difference is transit network improvements, where we're expanding or enhancing current investments, versus regional transit corridors, where we can see that transit demand justifies infrastructure, service, or technology improvements, where demand supports all-day frequent service, and where there's regional significance, meaning that we're connecting not just Baltimore City, but Baltimore City to Howard County, to Anne Arundel County, and to show how the region can be better connected. So inside of, again, the plan, I talked about now the goals, the objectives, the strategies, including the regional transit corridors and the transit network improvements. Next, I'm going to go on to targets, which will help us see how we're actually doing. So we're going to be having a progress dashboard where some of the, again, I pulled out just a few examples of targets that I think would be most interesting for this group. The first is increase MDOT MTA's on-time performance for core bus to 85% by 2020. By 2025. Today is 2020. Second is maintain MDOT MTA's standing as one of the safest transit systems out of the top 12 U.S. transit agencies. And the third is reach and maintain on-time performance for MDOT MTA paratransit service to 95% across the region by 2025. This last bullet is an example of something that actually we discussed previously with the SILS, where it's not just that the MDOT MTA paratransit vehicle arrives on time, but that you actually are able to get to your destination on time. In some ways, that is a more important outcome to measure. So I'm now going to move ahead to just give a sense of how we've been discussing this project so far. Normally, we would be going out and talking to people at transit stations. Obviously, we'd be going to do in-person presentations at community meetings, and we can't do that right now. So we have been heavily relying on our website. That is RTP, like Regional Transit Plan, .MTA, like Maryland Transit Administration, .Maryland.gov. And there you can see every piece of information or investigation that we've done so far, including boards and flyers that we've given out up until this point. You can see, again, presentations that we've given to the previous commission meetings where Katie Collins-Urkey from ARI is one of the commissioners. Right now, if you go to the website, you can also find an easy link to make comments on the draft plan. We've been experimenting a little bit with a new service that doesn't require you to download a PDF and then send email comments, but instead you can actually attach a virtual sticky note directly into the PDF text. So you can call out a specific image or a specific phrase, and you can write directly onto the plan as if it were a sticky note, and other people can see those notes and can respond. Now, again, as I said before, we do have a downloadable screen reader accessible version as well that you can download, and you can send us an email, you can call us. We have a dedicated phone number that you can call. You can also, of course, come and attend the commission meeting tomorrow and provide public testimony. So tomorrow is the last day to provide draft comments. June 18th represents, I guess, almost 2 months that we were out for public comments. The next major milestone is going to be October 1st, where we deliver the final plan to the state legislature. So we've been sending out information to our email list, which is approximately 1,670 or so people. And we've also been doing geo-targeted social media ads. So you might have already seen them on Facebook or on other media where we're actually paying to make sure that we're getting the message out. And of course, we're making presentations like the one we're doing today. On the website, we've also got examples of this plan overview, which is kind of a shorter version of the document that is, you know, 60 pages in total. So this is a shorter kind of summary for folks. We also have been doing a little bit of experiments with a live chat function where, just like if you go to your bank's website and you've got a question for customer service, you can go into a little chat box with an agent and that person can help you out. We've been doing that as well on the website. So people can come leave messages, we can respond. And then there are certain office hours that we hold every week where people can come and ask us questions and get answers in real time. So I'm wrapping up now. As I said before, tomorrow, June 18th, is the final day to submit comments. We're going to be having our virtual commission meeting tomorrow from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. I can confirm as of about 6 p.m. today that we also will be having a closed captioning service available. So we'll have a separate link that we'll be posting when you join the meeting so that you can also follow along with all the audio discussion. The presentations are already online at rtp.mta.maryland.gov. And if you are interested in joining, you can go to that same website, rtp.mta.maryland.gov, and you can just go /commission at the end, and that will take you straight to the WebEx page. You can also call in directly. The number is 408-418-9388. The call-in number again is 408-418-9388, and then you can enter access code 713-207-356. That's access code 713-207-356. And all of the information I've given today, all of the access codes, all of the materials, those are in this presentation, which again, we've shared and you should be able to access whenever you're shared that document. So I think I've used up a good amount of time. We really would like to have more discussion here. If you'd like, we can also start with some of the great points that we've already heard from others when we presented this plan, but we're also open to going in whatever direction you guys would like. And I'll turn it back to Jamie now.
Thank you so much, Teddy. So something I'd like to reinforce about the development of this plan is that it was not just MTA sitting in an office developing transit and the direction it will take for the next 25 years. This has been a really inclusive, thorough, and engaging effort with communities across Central Maryland, representatives from business and education and healthcare, representatives at the state and local level, and citizens and advocates, which is what we've really chosen to highlight here. The opportunity to build this plan together is what makes it a good, strong plan, but it is not set in stone. So there are many opportunities still for feedback. And we heard some of that on last Wednesday's call that Teddy had mentioned. We joined a call hosted by ARI and attended by many of our Inclusive Transportation Planning Steering Committee members. We also heard from members of the public about concerns with paratransit and arriving on time to your appointments, which is more important than ever. We've heard feedback about actionable steps to take to ensure sensitivity training. So I'd like to have Teddy share one or two of the sort of highlights of last week's call. And then, of course, we are here to listen, we're here to take notes, and we're here to answer questions that you have.
Sure, well, how about this? Let's start with the sensitivity training. As I said before, we actually have already produced a document that I believe at times earlier versions we have shared with some of our members of the SILS, but I'm not sure if they've seen the final version. What would people on this call like to be included in a sensitivity training for MTA operators?
Yes. Everybody.
Yep. Go ahead and unmute yourself if you'd like to join in.
See. It's Aloma.
Hi, Aloma.
Hi. I was just waiting to see if anybody else wanted to go ahead.
Oh, please. You're welcome to start.
Go ahead, Aloma.
All right. Pardon me? Runza, is that you?
Go ahead.
Don't mean to wait.
I said go. Go for it.
Go. Okay, thank you. I have been a part of this committee. I was there at MDOT when we had our big development long-term plan for all of this. So I and I've reread it and looked at the drafts, and we've submitted comments and things. But to get to a couple of specific things tonight, one of them, you asked what we would want to see in sensitivity training. And that, I can tell you, pretty much a blanket statement would be that we don't want any sensitivity training regarding blindness or any kind of blindness accessibility issues without our participation. That has to be done by blind people themselves. I don't want to assume that you would automatically go there, so I'm just making that point, please, that's our main goal in sensitivity training, is to let us direct what we know is helpful and important to us, as opposed to somebody who doesn't have the experience with blindness.
Thank you for that comment, Aloma. I think historically, training would have been conducted the way you described, without full participation, leadership, and guidance from members of the blind community. But I think over the past few years, we've made really strong steps towards having people with disabilities and older adults direct the type of content they'd like to see us develop. I am hopeful that if you were to speak to anyone from our inclusive planning committee, they would echo that sentiment. But for example, something that we had that I think really shows our progress and our evolution is that we created Braille route books for MTA's frequent transit schedules. And we worked with NFB Jernigan staff to develop them. We had staff at the Lighthouse for the Blind in San Francisco print them and test them. And then we brought these route books back to the community and tested them at some NFB chapter meetings and with the Image Center. So from inception through testing, each step was led by someone who was blind, because I, as a sighted person, cannot provide that same experience or feedback. And these are the lessons that we have learned the hard way and continue to learn. So I very much appreciate you elevating that.
Thank you.
Sharon Manecki.
Hi, Sharon. Please go ahead.
I don't want to talk about sensitivity training. I want to get back to something that you said that I think will kind of clarify things. Okay, now you... by the way, you will definitely get some comments from our organization, okay?
Yes, ma'am.
But where is this accessible document that you're talking about?
Certainly. So on the website, rpp.mta.maryland.gov.
Yeah, but where? Where on the website?
If you navigate to resources.
I'm sorry, we're having trouble hearing you, Jamie. Sharon, if you can back off your microphone a little bit.
Okay.
Sorry about that. There are draft plan materials listed. There is a plain text Word document, a screen reader accessible PDF, a Spanish PDF, and an English PDF, all at the resources tab of rtp.mta.maryland.gov.
Okay, Jamie, it would have been nice to have some direction to there, because I looked and I did not know that was there, and the website that is available to the whole public is the document's very unwieldy. If you try to write the comments, you can't do it without some assistance, without some sighted assistance. Now, I mean, there should have been some direction that there were these resources there.
I appreciate the feedback.
And I put into the chat here the direct link so you can find it immediately. I'm sorry to hear that you had trouble finding the information on the resources page, and I do recognize that it is hard to use the draft plan interactive kind of comment service, that it is supposed to be accessible, but it's not quite as simple, especially when there's now close to 800 comments in total on the draft plan. So
well,
people are finding it, but it's also getting crowded.
It's more than just finding the comments. It's getting through the CAPTCHA. It's getting on to the right part. And I guess that brings me to the point that I really want to make. I think that accessibility has to be one of your strategies. And I think it should be elevated to that level. So, for example, it's not just websites. We need accessible apps. The Mark Train app used to be accessible. It got upgraded, and now it is not. We need signage. We need accessibility all throughout the whole plan. And if it's not listed there as a strategy,
I don't believe
you're going to achieve your objectives.
So I have a question in light of Sharon's comment, and then somebody in the chat, Cheryl's asking, is there any possibility that the comment period might be extended?
This is Teddy speaking. The comment period will not be able to be extended, but the actual draft plan with all the comments locked in, you'll be able to see that for a good long time. So you can still read it. To be honest, you can still send me an email if you'd really like. I'm happy to provide that. But technically, comment period will be over on June 18th, which is tomorrow. And again, we have been advertising this for quite a while. I'm sorry if this is just the first time that people are hearing about it. But that's unfortunate kind of how things are sometimes, which is that we can't reach everyone all the time. And in terms of accessibility, absolutely. I think that, again, today we went through just a few examples of the strategies. There are literally dozens more, and many of them are focused on exactly what you're describing, not only in terms of signage, but also in terms of being able to access transit locations. In fact, that was one of the suggestions that we received last week when we presented with the ARI group, where there's a suggestion that for trip planning tools, it would be helpful to be able to see actually which stops were accessible before you went and planned your journey. So if you knew which stations, which bus stops had curbs that you could go up and down, had ramps, that would really be a very helpful tool in the future. And so we've included that in our notes.
Teddy, what's your email address, please?
Is it okay?
I'll put it right here. So most of our people are on the phone. They're on landlines. So a few of them can see it. But if you want to share it, go ahead. Otherwise, I am going to take a grab of the chat window, and I'll have anything that's in the chat window, including the location, Sharon, that I can share.
Can you also please share the phone number and access code for tomorrow?
Yep. That's in the presentation, but I'll also pull it out and put it specially into the.
Great. Danielson. I apologize.
Why can't you just repeat it again?
I'm happy to repeat it again. It is 408-418-9388. That is the call number. Again, it's 408-418-9388. And the access code is 713-207-356. Again, the access code is 713-207-356.
Teddy, give that one more time when Sharon is done typing, because her Braille writer is very loud.
Sure. Would you like the call number and the access code?
Yes.
Okay, so it is 408-418-9388, and I've just put that into the chat as well. And then the access code is 713-207-356.
Thank you.
Danielson.
I do apologize. They did send me the PowerPoint presentation in PowerPoint and in text format, but I didn't see it until just before this meeting, but I will send it out. Chris.
Hey, so first of all, thank you for being on the call tonight. And I did want to emphasize what Sharon's talking about. So I hear what you're saying about the strategies, including things like making sure we know what stops are the most physically accessible and all that. But in terms of the website and app accessibility, when Sharon talks about that needing to be a strategy, what that means is, so for example, I imagine that I don't know for sure, but I imagine that the app is developed by a third-party developer. And what clearly happened is they went ahead and updated the app. Nobody checked it for accessibility. And really, you can't check for accessibility purely with an automated piece of software. You need for blind people to check the app and make sure, or, you know, that's the ideal solution, or somebody's got to check it with actual screen readers and see if it's working, preferably blind people. And if you don't have a plan in place so that, for example, all of your third-party developers know what is expected in terms of it has to be compatible with VoiceOver, it has to be compatible with TalkBack for Android, it has to be accessible on the website, all of those things, I guarantee you it will not happen. Sharon just said this app was accessible, and it's not now, and that I haven't tried it recently, but I am willing to take Sharon's word for it, and that happened because nobody tested for it, and somebody went in and broke it. They may not have meant to, but they broke accessibility, and that's what we mean when we talk about elevating accessibility to a strategy. There has to be a plan for it, and it has to be an enforced plan, and it has to be part of the system so that stuff does not go out that is inaccessible, and then you are telling us, oh, we'll fix it later. I'm sorry if all that sounds really demanding and harsh, but I really feel strongly about it, and I felt like you guys needed to hear it.
So let me just add something to what Chris is saying. It's the law in Maryland, actually, that the technology developed or procured by any state entity, including the Maryland Department of Transportation, be accessible comparable to federal 508 standards. And so I know that you've been working with the CENA, with Center for Excellence in Non-Visual Access, on some other aspects. I'm sure that the Maryland Department of Disabilities will be happy to help you sort of find some resources to make sure that apps and websites, and when you're talking about MTA, you're also talking about kiosks, are all accessible and technology accessible, and so that people who are using screen readers and other types of assistive technology can use them. But I do want to reiterate, not to sort of overemphasize this issue, because it can't be overemphasized, is that accessibility is more than ADA, Physical, Architectural Barriers Act accessibility. So, looking at the PowerPoint, like, you get it. In many aspects, you get it. You talk about an accessible version of the document, which, clearly we had some challenges finding, but you know that you need to do that. What we need you to understand for us is it's more than just ramps and curb cuts. It's also visual information being conveyed in a non-visual way. It's also us being able to access information that you are presenting or conveying using our assistive technology, like apps, like the MTA Mark app and others. So I hope, and hearing what some of the folks here have said, and we're gonna let other people who have questions ask them in a minute, but I don't want it to feel like, I think it's deliberate that we're spending so much time and energy talking to you about accessibility from a blindness perspective, because we depend on public transportation to get anywhere, to do our lives, to live our lives, to the grocery store, to the work, to the so forth. So if there's even just one break in communications access, then you're literally impacting somebody's livelihood.
So really appreciate the opportunity to hear this, and thank you for being so forthright with us. We understand that this isn't just, you know, a website or an app. This is your life, and we take that very seriously. I have a quick clarifying question just so I can make sure that this is reviewed and addressed accordingly. Both Sharon and Christopher noted an app. So I have two thoughts that come to mind. We worked with Anil's group to review the two third-party apps that we advertise for fare purchases and for bus and train arrivals. So those are the Charm Pass and Transit apps. And we had a number of his team, who are both sighted and non, go out and use these apps, provide feedback on both Android and Apple systems, and give us guidance on what worked for them and what didn't, so that we could work with the developers to try and address these. Because again, we understand this is not just an app, it's meaningful things that require us to act. So were those the two apps you were both referring to, just so I can make sure I have this correct?
I was referring to the Mark app. And if Janice Forbes is on here, she can add some clarification.
She was. Let's see if she's still here.
I just want to make sure that I have this correct, because we don't produce...
So the Transit app is the Mark app.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Here's Janice. Janice?
Oh, Janice is muted.
Yeah, I'm trying to. I think we're both hitting her. So if you want to go ahead and grab her, my computer is not letting me unmute anyone.
Hi, Janice. I believe you were unmuted. Janice, are you available?
That's okay. Maybe she stepped away. Or Janice, if you... If I mislabeled you, which I could have. Yeah, this is Janice.
Okay, there you go. I've been hitting that button for...
Well, it's great to hear you, Janice. I'm glad we got that started.
It was very eloquent the first and second time I said what I'm about to say.
Oh.
But no, it's not. So the app was not... I did not get it through MTA. It was a third-party app. It had... basically the times of the Mark, both the Penn and the Camden line, along with all of the stops along the way.
Okay. It sounds to me like you're describing the Transit app, and you are correct in saying that it would show the stops and the times. We have heard some positive feedback about it, but we've also heard some negative feedback about its accessibility features, especially as the developer has pushed new updates. So that's something that we coordinate with them on, and the Transit app covers agencies across the US and Canada. So things that we can identify for them to improve have a ripple effect in benefiting accessibility throughout North America.
Good. Danielson?
Yes, sir.
If I can just say, if you're coordinating look, there are always going to be issues that probably always going to be issues that you don't catch. That there are bugs. We all understand that. But really, I feel like it's important if you're coordinating with the, and I haven't tried this particular app, so I wasn't speaking to that. I used the Charm Pass app a while ago and I didn't have any particular issues with it. It worked pretty well. But anyway, just to be clear, if you're coordinating with the developer on updates, it's really important that you, that when accessibility issues are identified, you tell them, do not push an update until this is fixed. Do not push this update until this is fixed. Thank you.
So can I just get some clarification? Because I'm not sure I understood. Is it the transit app that Janice was talking about, or is it a third party app that's not pushed by MTA?
So MTA, for a number of reasons, has chosen not to develop its own app. First and foremost, they are challenging to update and maintain. And second, there are apps that exist that other agencies across the US and Canada are already using with great success. So the app itself is called Transit, and it's a third-party external app that MTA provides its data to. You'll also note that when you're using it, local systems and other systems that you may travel throughout the region on, such as WMATA or VRE or other local systems, feed into that as well. So this allows us to make sure that data is shared without having to own or maintain any apps.
So do you pay them to, are these third parties, people that are entities that are contracted with the state of Maryland, or are they just out there making their own money, doing whatever, and they just have access to your information?
So all of our transit information is publicly available. I am not certain on the specifics of how the contracts work, but I do know that we have partnered with both CharmPass as a branded app for us by MoveIt and Transit App, which is, again, that third-party app that shows arrivals and departures. But I can certainly find out more details about the way the contracts operate.
Hi, Jamie. This is Teddy. I can help provide a little bit more clarity. In the case of Transit App, there is no money exchange between MTA and Transit App. The agreement is that Transit App is the so-called preferred app of MTA, and that's kind of as far as it goes. That means that we do have the ability to make suggestions and improvements, and we can push specific kind of emergency or other pop-up notifications. But there is no actual monetary, transaction. And an additional thing that's really important to note with Transit App is that it provides real-time information. So it's not just the schedule, but actually where the bus or the other transit vehicle is located truly. And what's exciting is that last year, I guess a little bit more than that actually, we started to provide real-time bus arrival and departure information. Now we are able to provide that for additional modes. So for example, if you do open up the Transit App today, you'll have real-time arrival and departure information for MARC train. Light rail, I believe, is also either coming or is about to. And then Metro, which is our subway, is the most challenging for a variety of reasons, but that is also planned to roll out at some point this year. So would strongly encourage people to use Transit App, but you don't have to. As Jamie was saying, the underlying information is actually part of an open data format that Jamie can go into greater detail on, GTFS, and it's the exact same data that Google Maps uses and a variety of other third-party developers. So I hope that provides a little bit more information.
Well, if it is the preferred MTA sort of app, then you're sort of associating yourself with it, then you are required to make it accessible. You are required to make them make it accessible.
And that's precisely why Jamie was explaining that we did do the extended evaluation of the app with our partners in NFB. And if we need to do that again, then we absolutely should.
And do you know when it'll be fixed?
To be honest, I'm not sure what the specific issue is, because we haven't the caller was not able to tell us exactly what the issue is. So I can't give you a specific answer yet on that.
Okay. And I'm just opening, I have not updated it in months. So I'm opening it to see what I see. We have a question in the chat, and this is a very common problem that blind people experience, that the automated announcements on MTA vehicles is often turned off. And so it is important to our community that the automated stop announcements not be turned off, but also, and I know that we've said this, I know that Disability Rights Maryland has said this, I know that this is, we've been talking about this for years, that not only do the bus operators not turn them off, except for, you know, they do that now until they see a blind person and then they maybe remember, maybe don't, but that they have, they are not able to turn them off. The mechanism that permits a bus operator to turn off the automated, you know, voice announcements of location and stops needs to be disabled so that a bus operator or anyone cannot turn off what is essential, a right that blind people have with regard to transportation. And so I'd like for you to, and Elena would as well, sort of comment on that.
Yeah, Ronza, this has been something that frequently does come up, and I want to make very clear, because I think this is unfortunately a misconception. The operator has zero ability to turn those announcements off or on. I certainly understand, I know that the announcements do not always get played, but that's not the operator's fault. That is an issue with the bus itself, with the audio system, and that's something that absolutely we need to get fixed. But I want to make it clear that that is not the operator making individual decisions about which audio announcements get played or do not.
So how do they turn off then?
I want to repeat that. They cannot turn it off.
I mean, how do they get turned off? How is it that there is a bus that will not have the automated announcements operating?
It's not a matter of getting turned off. It's a matter of not functioning. That's the issue. And so again, that's a serious issue, but I just want to make sure that that's not the operator's fault. That's to make sure on our mechanics and our maintenance team that we have the correct equipment and that it's working properly. So again, still a very serious issue, but it's not the fault of the bus operator.
Okay, that's helpful, but it sure does seem to happen a lot.
And we recognize that. We've done many, many ride-alongs where, again, the announcements are not properly working, whether it's on bus or it's on metro or on light rail. Absolutely, we know this is a top priority and we bring it up constantly.
Aloma?
I appreciate that very much. However, there's a piece that you left out, and I'm not, maybe you're aware of it, you may not be aware of it. But the fact of the matter is that drivers can turn those systems off very simply. All they have to do is enter a wrong code, and they can do that deliberately or accidentally. Those codes have to be changed and entered when those bus routes change, when they change directions, when they change to a whole different new route. Sometimes they're reset with the driver's change. And all day long, there are drivers that have control over setting that system in place. And they do it by codes, and every route has about a dozen different codes. And all they have to do is put in a wrong code and it won't work. So I'm not accusing them of doing this all deliberately, but it's not true to say that drivers can't have some control over this. They control it all day long.
I've also had bus operators tell me that they deliberately turned it off because they don't like it. It bothers them. And yep. They can't effectively monitor the bus.
Mm-hmm. When I say this is a very serious issue. And we take it as such. And I'm sorry to hear that these are the things that the operators are telling you. I guess what I'm trying to say is that if they are disabling all of those, if they're not entering the right code, there's much more than just the audio announcements that are not being properly corrected or displayed. And so it's not, again, individual decision to only turn off the audio. They're also disabling many other things. If they are actually doing what you are saying they're doing, which I would hope that they're not, and again, without being there when this happens, I'll refrain from going any further into, you know, the alleged behavior, but I certainly am hearing it, what you're saying, and do take it very seriously.
Thank you.
Okay, other questions? And I'm sorry, were you all finished with the presentation part of this? I know we started with the questions and you might not have been ready for that.
No, that's fine. We have other comments that we could use as kind of discussion starters that we've received previously. We can continue with those or we can open it up to the floor. What do you think would be best? I can read them. We've got, maybe five or six and maybe
sure.
If people want to. Sure. Okay. So the first I mentioned previously was when measuring on-time performance for paratransit, it's important to track not just reaching the customer, but also when you reach the destination. So that's an important distinction between arrival at the destination versus the pickup points. The second was consider installing beacons at key hubs or stops to assist those with vision impairments knowing where they are in proximity to the stop or station. The third point was that there are interesting case studies from around the world, including Japan, of agencies using tactile warning strips to differentiate a bus stop area. The fourth is that MTA and jurisdictional partners should consider a scoring system that prioritizes ADA improvements in locations that need it most due to origin, destination, population served, so including demographic analysis. And then we also include social determinants of health. So recognizing that transportation is a very important part, again, in social determinants of health, and to place more emphasis on minorities and lower income populations in the Be Equitable section. Those are things that we have already incorporated. If you come to or if you attend tomorrow's virtual commission meeting, you'll get a flavor or I guess a taste of what we've done so far. So those were maybe four or five ideas. We can continue on any of those or we can go on to another topic.
Could you repeat?
Would you like me to repeat?
Sorry. No, go ahead, Ty. I apologize. I'll wait.
I just had a comment about the first one, if that's okay.
Go ahead, Ty.
Okay. Yeah. About the whole thing with paratransit, about not only, you know, measuring the on-time performance by not only, you know, if they arrive to pick the person up on time, but they're getting them to their destination. That I would agree with that. That is definitely an important thing because there's lots of times where, you know, they may come late to pick you up, but they might come on time to pick you up and you get to your location way late because of the way they schedule rides, you know, schedule who's going to be, how many people the operator has to pick up or, you know, that sort of thing. So that definitely needs to be improving.
What about the possibility of adding in real-time location tracking for your mobility driver? So that you don't have to wait 30 minutes and call and spend an hour waiting on the phone to find out that, yes, it is already late.
Right.
Very helpful. So, I am taking down these notes, so thank you. Please keep that coming.
So I want to share with you all We wrote a letter along with a bunch of other organizations, I want to say in January, two secretaries ago, I think, about mobility specifically and all the various challenges that mobility has had. And we can't tell that anything's improved because there was a mobility outage on Sunday after all these improvements were purportedly in place. But so we got a response on, I want to say it was last Wednesday or Thursday. And they did go into a lot of the enhancements and changes and things and upgrading different systems that they've been working on and will be working on. And mobility is going to be much more sort of automated from a user experience perspective for those who want it. They are talking about, you know, incorporating app communication so that individuals, riders can communicate directly with drivers or share information about, you know, for example, come to the back of the house as opposed to the front of the house, or, you know, I'll be there in 5 minutes and all of these things. So there is some enhancements purportedly coming with mobility as well as an upgrade, according to this letter, for route tracking, route information. So like actually route scheduling information and some other sorts of things. So I know that there are lots of organizations. I think this, our coalition has something like 40 or 50 organizations directly working on this issue.
We appreciate your attention to these issues. Thank you for holding us accountable.
Okay, so we got a couple of hands raised. And I know I mislabeled Wendy because I have Wendy twice. But we'll take Laura first. Let me get you, Laura. You can either unmute yourself or I can do it for you. Oops. Okay, Laura.
Hi. Thank you. Yep. Hi, thank you, ma'am, for both of you for coming and talking on this subject and hearing our concerns, and hopefully they'll be implemented in this master plan. One of my questions is the mode that the contractors use for paratransit, depending what system you're using, where you're located in the state, and their GPS system is so antiquated and their refusal to use anything more to help them with the traffic. Yes, they may be the shortest in distance, but traffic, they will not hear. And so here they're going into a situation and it's kind of like they're operating like 15 years ago. So my question is, oh yes, we'll get to it. I just find that it would, you know, the reason I present it is because the traffic in the Washington area, as is in Baltimore, but any major congestion area, I'm so frustrated every time I have to use it because I'm thinking, you can go here, here. No, the ranger tells me. So that's a major issue. Now, I understand that you may not be the highest priority, but if you want to save money, time, I can see that one is a high priority. Yes, they'd have to have something as, you know, present day used. And I understand they can't use their phones when they're driving because of their model rule. But that would really help a system process in terms of time and money. Thank you. Can you comment?
Certainly. So there are ongoing developments to upgrade and enhance the systems that are used in mobility vehicles. And because I work with MTA Mobility, I'll focus my response on theirs. There are separate contractors, and each one is operating slightly different equipment. So we understand that that can cause frustration. I also absolutely hear you on the fact that traffic continues to grow worse in our region, and that when you're in a transit vehicle, you're oftentimes in the same traffic as people in their cars. So no one is getting anywhere any faster. We certainly understand the frustration there. And I wish I had an actionable item that would identify a time and a date that things would be improved. But please do know that we are working on technology improvements to at least mitigate some of those challenges.
Thank you. It's still a major time and expense. I'm not saying that we're going to get around the traffic, but the drivers refusing, saying, no, we don't have any other system, seems archaic in this technology. That's my concern. And thank you.
Thanks, Laura. All right, this may or may not be Wendy, who I just muted. If you just noticed you were unmuted, please go ahead and speak.
This is Tracy.
Tracy, I'm sorry, Tracy, you're Wendy today.
Okay, I have two questions or two ideas. When drivers are in training, I'm referring to MTA Mobility. When drivers are in training, do you all take them to the larger locations and point out different entrances to them? Because the problem we have at Social Security, for instance, which has several entrances because it has so many buildings, drivers will spend 45 minutes to an hour on the campus trying to find a location, which is ridiculous. But I want to know if during their training, are they shown, you know, the different entrance on large locations such as Social Security? That's one. And the other has nothing to do with that, but it have you all ever thought about doing transfer points for, say, if I want to go to Howard County? I'm not able to go to Howard County now because there's no MTA Mobility that goes to Howard County. But do they have transfer points where MTA Mobility in Baltimore County would meet up with Howard County to transfer a customer?
All right, I will go ahead and answer the questions. If I miss anything, please let me know. When drivers are in training, are they taken to larger locations and are they shown different entrances? To the best of my knowledge, especially at common drop-off locations, they are. However, this does not mean that every time a driver picks up or drops off, they are at the appropriate location. And these are really helpful things for us to know. If you experience something like this, please report it so that we can address it with the driver, so that we can train and retrain as necessary and ensure that you're not wasting your time as you wait for a driver who's looking for an entrance or, you know, just not getting you where you need to go. The second question about co-located mobility drop-offs between jurisdictions, that has been discussed as part of the regional transit plan. And it's certainly something we understand is important. We are not just Baltimore City. We are not just Howard County. We are the Central Maryland region. And people are traveling across jurisdictions every single day. So making sure that these transfers, specifically the paratransit transfers, are improved is a focus. I don't know that there are specific actionable responses as of today because the plan is still in development.
Okay. So, Jamie, as a follow-up to that, Graham Mel would kill me. Oh, you're here. Good. So Graham and Melissa are going to have lots to say about this particular issue with regard to the cross-county challenge and counties having individual jurisdiction over transportation that then limit or hinder somebody from using the statewide system becomes problematic. So Graham and Melissa.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, were you done, Tracy?
Yes, I just want to say thank you.
Okay. Yes, ma'am, thank you for your feedback.
Mm-hmm. Graham and Melissa, I've asked you to unmute.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, well, part of my question, this is Graham, by the way, and my question kind of talks to what Rhonda was talking about with multi-jurisdictions, because part of my difficulty recently with, because I work in Howard County, but I also have times where I also work in Arundel County, and the paratransit service that I use, the mobility service, is through Howard County, because that's the mobility service that services my area out of the Columbia area. And it's through RTA, or Regional Transportation Agency. Mm-hmm. And their systems always seem to be having issues with schedulers, causing weird schedules. And the systems, they have still boxes that collect cash in them. It's not like any other type of thing. So it's like outdated things compared to what MTA and Metro has for their systems. But just recently, there was an agreement between, I think it's PG County, Howard County, and Anne Arundel County in particular, that RTA would service those mobility-wise. Now, that changed as of July last year, that the plan changed such that Anne Arundel County wanted to stand up more of their own mobility services out of Anne Arundel County. And that sort of put me in a pinch, because I live in Anne Arundel County, but I commute mostly to Howard County to work in other things. And so if I live in one jurisdiction, RTA will not take me unless I cross their Howard County border. And so there's an issue there. And then secondly, when I tried to reach out to Anne Arundel County to set up arrangements with them, they said that I have to go through a recertification process, even though I was certified both with MTA and RTA through those, MTA in Baltimore City, as well as Howard County certified. And they said, okay, we recognize you that you have a mobility certification, but we still have to send you through an application process for because of the way they have that set up. So the certification process is basically part of my
So there's no reciprocity in certification.
Yeah, and that's where I was going at, is there's an issue there. And then when I started to deal with Anne Arundel County to possibly arrange stuff to get into Fort Meade, they said, well, we're only going to really, we'll service you, but your hours are going to be limited on the mobility because our primary focus is going to be in Annapolis on the eastern part of the county. And I, of course, live in Laurel, which is on the western edge of the county. And so anywhere I want to travel within the western part is going to be limited in that regard. So so there's issues that I have or concerns when I have to deal with the Anne Arundel County, I'm going to have my service limited based on their system and also the cross certification between counties, because I live in multiple, I cross county lines most of the time. I live in a mile from the PG County itself. So in downtown Laurel is okay. In PG County. So
let's give Jamie a chance to respond.
Yeah, I just want to add one thing to that is that you were talking earlier, I came in late to the meeting, but you're talking about tracking people. And I know the RTA system the dispatchers can track their own people, but how does that play into the overall system that tracking them too? So I don't understand how RTA system will be able to patch into a transit app or whatever else that is possibly used. So that was my other question coming into this. Thank you.
Okay, Graham, you raised a lot of issues, so I want to make sure that I do get to them. And because it is 9:15 now and I want to be cognizant of everyone's time, if you want to follow up with Teddy and I separately, I would certainly appreciate that. I understand that especially with the new transit service in Anne Arundel County, certification continues to be an issue, and the lack of a reciprocity agreement does not make traveling across these jurisdictions any easier. So happy to follow up offline. I think that would be appropriate. I used to work at CMRT in Laurel. I understand the challenge of being located at this confluence of systems and how challenging it can be to try to coordinate across. And these types of things are near and dear to both my heart and the folks who have helped develop this plan. There are a lot of challenges. That has been made very clear. And these we experience every day. What we're trying to find a way to do with this plan is make sure we don't continue doing the same thing for the next 25 years, and that we identify strategic and actionable ways forward so that you don't have to find yourself in these predicaments. I hope that starts to get to some of what you're saying. I want to make sure we do have time for one or two more questions and then wrap up, but please, anyone on this call, please feel free to reach out to Teddy and I offline. I can't promise I'll respond to you tonight, but we will make sure to get back to you. I'm sorry, it's past my bedtime. I go to bed at 8:00.
Oh, okay. Yes, we committed to like half an hour and it's been an hour and a half. So if you can just indulge us for just a few more minutes.
Absolutely.
And the challenge that Graham raised is not unique. We've got some people who live in Baltimore City or Baltimore County who need to commute out to Howard or Anne Arundel, and you know, they're stuck in this sort of feedback loop of, you know, not my problem, not my problem, not my problem, not my problem, depending on the jurisdiction. And then, so they end up having to find some place, right, where they can change transportation vehicles. And it's just, it's such a pain. It's not really necessary. Mm-hmm. One thing, Sharon, I'm not sure if you have your hand raised from before or you have something else, but before you do that, I just want to talk for a minute about certification and recertification. And so currently, as I understand it from the Department of Disabilities, mobility recertification can be done remotely if you already have an existing account, if you've already been certified, if you are blind.
That's not what the system's telling you.
And so that's one issue, is that the system doesn't seem to be saying that, even though both MTA and the Maryland Department of Disabilities says that that is should be, or that is supposed to be the current policy. So is there going to be a repair to ensure that that is actually happening during COVID? And two, is that something that it will be extended beyond COVID? Because somebody who's blind, for example, is always going to be blind. Their medical situation, unless it's an absolute miracle, and that's probably like 0.00000001% of blind people, which is a low incidence disability anyway, it's not going to change.
So to your question and point about recertification, so I know that currently because of COVID, we are operating in a remote fashion. So that reduced fare certifications and mobility certifications are being extended if they expire, and that in-person eligibility certification assessments and determinations, those are temporarily suspended or are being replaced with desk reviews and telephone reviews, telephone interviews. I wasn't aware of any issues within the system, so I appreciate you bringing that to my attention, and I will connect with the director of mobility in the morning to advise him of what you've shared with us. And I'm happy to respond back when I hear from him, if that would be okay.
Yep. And if you need an example, you can use me because
yes, ma'am.
I did try to do it and I was told, nope, you have to wait until we are reopened and then you have to come in. And I said, well, what do I do in the meantime if I have to go somewhere? And yeah.
I am happy to check on that, and I'll respond to you as soon as he gets back to me. I'll call him first thing in the morning.
All right. Sharon?
Yes, thank you. I just want to throw out a little bit of a different subject. I think one of the problems that we have with this plan is that it doesn't look like you're looking at your policies as well as planning for new and improved things. And I guess our idea is that you really need to look at the policies too. For example, we have no problem with dedicated bus lanes. But how is the pedestrian going to get to the bus lane? And that doesn't appear to be addressed. We don't have problems with the idea of bicycles and scooters being a form of transportation. But if you're going to let them in the station, what are you doing to protect the pedestrians? Are you going to have parking pens? Are you going to have a law or something that says you cannot put those things on the platform? You know, where is the protection for pedestrians?
I think that's a very important issue. And what you're going to note as you review the plan is that a lot of these questions are not explicitly answered. Like you said, we need to make sure that we're doing our work internally and reviewing our policies, along with identifying what we're going to do that's new and improved. I know your examples are valid, very much so. Right now, you can bring a bicycle on most of our transit modes. However, we don't have clear guidance for how a bike rider navigates a station and how space is allocated or shared, or once on a vehicle, specifically an example in my mind is light rail or metro. Are these things being communicated clearly and in a way that everyone can access and understand? And I don't think we're doing as good of a job as we could. So your point is very well taken.
So Elena has a recommendation in the chat related to disability seating. She says that there are drivers, bus operators who believe that individuals who are blind must sit in those seats, and then when there's a stop where a wheelchair user may be there, the bus driver tells them there's not accessible seating available for them because there are blind people in those seats. And so what she is suggesting, and I think we all echo this, that the bus driver not assume that blind people need to sit in the ADA seating, but ask them if they do or not. And because most of the time, if there is a blind person sitting in those seats, they would be happy to vacate it for somebody who is using a wheelchair.
And we can absolutely communicate that. And this, again, harkens back to identifying what we're not doing well and making sure to focus on that along with identifying what we're doing next.
So another comment that was sent to me privately surrounds bus stacking. Blind people use buses as a mode of transportation and use the audio stops to alert them to where the stops are if they're on the bus, but they also use the audio messaging to alert them to which bus a particular bus is, if it's a blue or anything else, a silver and so forth. And so if there is bus stacking at a particular stop and a blind person is near the front of the stack, near the first bus, but there's two or three, they will not be able to hear the buses behind the first one. So they won't know if it's their bus or not. One thing that ends up happening is they sort of start running down the sidewalk to check each bus. But really the policy should be that every bus, regardless of where it is in the stack, it can load if it wants to back in the end, but it needs to stop at the front of the bus stop, where the bus stop is actually located when it gets its turn, so that anybody who needs to hear the audio notification can do that.
Thank you for sharing that, Ronza. I can immediately pinpoint an example of where we're not doing a good job with this. The Baltimore Arena stop on Baltimore Street before Charles Center is a constant issue, and I'm sure any of you who have ridden at that stop can understand. We have three distinct stops, but buses pull all the way to the front. And I have heard time and time again from passengers who use a wheelchair or a cane, from blind passengers, and from passengers who have small kids. If I'm waiting at a signed stop, the bus needs to stop there. So I know where to wait. I have ample time to board comfortably and safely. And other pedestrians and users of the transit system aren't sort of put in the way of me rushing or them rushing and injuring me. This is something we are trying to figure out, a strategy, whether it's curb extensions or bus bays. Clear announcements, I know, have been brought up a number of times, and that would help to a degree, but wouldn't solve the problem. So a lot of this also has to do with education and re-education of our drivers.
Thank you. Ty?
I actually have another issue that has come up more now because of COVID, but it could, in case, something else happens where, in the future, it'd be good to keep in mind in case something happens where we had to do the whole, rear door entry.
Rear boarding. Thing,
like we do right now. Okay, so the issue that I've had is, I'll be standing toward, the bus stop towards the front of the bus would be, and if they pull up, since everyone's supposed to get on in the back, if you're at a stop where there's multiple, especially if there's multiple buses, but even if there's just one, usually with the announcements, it's activated when the driver opens the door. So since they can't open the front door, since they want everyone to get on the back, you don't always know what bus it is. And one time, actually it's happened a couple of times, but there's one in particular where the driver actually refused to open the door to actually tell me what bus it was. And I'm guessing that he was trying to gesture for me to go to the back, but obviously since I can't see, I wouldn't have known that. Now, fortunately, he did eventually open the door and tell me, but, and the problem is I needed to get on in the front because I was with, I was with my wife, Melissa, who was using a wheelchair. So she, obviously we had to get on in the front. So that might be something to remind, that might be something to just kind of look at so that if something like that happens in the future, the drivers will know that they always need to at least let the person know what bus they are.
And this is something that we've actually heard from more than Ty, that other members have experienced. Either they're with an individual, they themselves cannot, climb the stair. They need the bus to kneel for them to be able to get on at the front. or they have a personal care attendant or an assistant with them. So, you know, the bus driver will allow the one person who has an obvious physical disability, but not the person who's their assistant, or somebody who doesn't have an obvious physical disability to come on in the front during COVID. And then, of course, the issue with the audio, with the audible announcements, speaking what the bus is. If you're standing somewhere in the middle, that's not where the bus, you don't know where the bus is going to stop, but you also don't know where the door is. And the other thing is, if you're using a cane to try to figure out where the door is, it used to be that the audio announcement was a beacon for you, that the door is over here where the thing is speaking. Now, when you're talking about getting on in the back of the bus, you've lost your audio cue. You don't know how far away you are from it. So this is, we understand, you know, the health and safety of bus operators is of paramount importance, but the health and safety of bus operators is not so important that we shut down the bus system, but we did essentially do that for people who are blind and rely on the audio or have physical disabilities that they need the front if bus drivers are not opening the door in the front for them to be able to use the ramp or for the bus to kneel.
I actually heard that as well from a couple colleagues at the Department of Disabilities. So I appreciate hearing again. And anything that we do here tonight, I have taken some pretty thorough notes and hope to have a series of follow-ups tomorrow morning. I do encourage all of you on the call again to review the plan if you are able to tomorrow and provide comment. If you have specific questions about any of the transit that MTA operates, please reach out directly to Teddy or I offline and we're happy to continue this conversation. I really appreciate having the chance to come on tonight and speak with you all. And I hope that we were able to provide a bit more of an overview of the regional transit plan and answer some of your questions.
Well, thank you very much to both Jamie and Teddy for coming on and for listening to our concerns and for hearing them and taking them back and hopefully incorporating them into the improvements for the plan. We will definitely be providing written comments. We've done so in a couple fora, but we will provide our official comments tomorrow by the deadline. And it takes a lot of, well, it takes a lot for somebody to come on at 8 o'clock at night to talk to a community. So we know it's late and we very much appreciate you and we hope to talk with you again.
Thank you again for the opportunity, everyone.
Okay, so we're going to shift gears and get to our traditional sort of COVID work. Thank you all for staying on and for having a very robust conversation. More robust than I expected, actually, but that was good. So I'm just pulling up our data. Okay. So, as of today, in terms of Maryland COVID-19, and globally and nationwide. So, globally, 8,383,000 total confirmed cases in the world. 450,000 and some change. 215 deaths, almost 500,000 people, 4,377 recoveries nationally, right. 2,232,000 confirmed cases in America, just under 120,000 confirmed deaths, 911,000 recoveries, and then Maryland still continues to do well per capita compared to parts of the rest of the country. 62,969 confirmed cases. We did have a significant number of cases yesterday, 560 new cases between yesterday and today. 2,866 confirmed deaths, 15 new deaths between yesterday and today. That number has continued to decrease. 702 currently hospitalized. That number is the lowest I've seen it in a while. 419 in acute care and 283 in intensive care. 10,000 and some change ever hospitalized and 4,596 released from any sort of isolation. So those are the people that are COVID-free. In Maryland, by age, 0 to 9, 1,792 cases and fortunately, zero confirmed deaths for little ones. Ages 10 to 19, 3,068 cases and one confirmed death. People ages 20 to 29, 9,025 cases, 14 confirmed deaths. People ages 30 to 39, 11,737 cases and 35 confirmed deaths. People ages 40 to 49, 11,277 cases and 87 confirmed deaths. So you'll notice that the numbers from here will start to decrease in terms of the numbers of infections, but increase in terms of the number of deaths. People ages 50 to 59, 9,975 cases and 214 confirmed deaths. People ages 60 to 69, 7,196 cases and 464 confirmed deaths. People ages 70 to 79, 4,590 cases and 704 confirmed deaths. People 80 or older, 4,309 cases and 1,321 confirmed deaths.
Oh, wow.
By gender, females, 32,715 cases and 1,398 confirmed deaths. Male, 30,254 cases, so about 2,500 fewer males who have it. 1,468 confirmed deaths. About 100 more deaths than in the male population than female, even though males have 2,500 fewer, less infections. By race, African-American, 18,017 cases and 1,176 confirmed deaths. Asian, 1,225 cases and 110 confirmed deaths. White, 12,244 cases and 1,214 confirmed deaths. So there are, if you look at the African-American versus the white populations, 18,000 cases in the African-American community, 12,240 cases in the white community, 1,176 confirmed deaths in the African-American community, and 1,214 confirmed deaths in the white community. So white people in Maryland, which is inconsistent with the rest of the country, are dying at a higher rate. Hispanic, 17,020 cases and 303 confirmed deaths. And 8 probable deaths. There is a high population of Hispanics that are being infected, but a lower population, a lower percentage that are succumbing. Other, 3,172 cases and 31 confirmed deaths. So that is our data. I have not been paying attention to what the governor has been saying. Other than on Friday, there will be certain things allowed to reopen on the 19th. There were some things that reopened. We went to phase two in a few, you know, last week, sorry. There will be some restaurants and things that are allowed to reopen at 50% capacity. There were some other types of businesses that can open and provide services. However, this is all sort of subject to what local jurisdictions are going to do or willing to do. So it may be that some places are still kind of behind. Baltimore City, for example, and Prince George's County, Montgomery County are still slow rolling this. Baltimore City is in phase one and just began that this, I believe it was this Monday. Any questions about COVID? And I really like Cindy as an audience. I think I'm never going to mute you again. You ooh and ah in all the right places.
You're welcome.
So star six to mute or to unmute yourself if you want to talk.
I thought I was muted.
You are not muted.
Oh. Okay.
I can always count on Aloma. Hi, Aloma. Okay.
Hi, I'm here.
Yes.
I was just about to unmute myself when I heard you say, I can always count on Aloma.
That's right.
Actually, I do have a question, but I wasn't mm-hmm. going to worry about it. In Maryland, I know you're not giving us the city and jurisdiction specifics, but I do know that PG and Montgomery are probably still on the increase, and I think Baltimore City still is. But overall, what we get from you doesn't necessarily compare. Are we on an uptrend these days, or are we?
So we are generally on a downward trend. We are, for example, if you look at hospitalization rates, we're well under 1,000. We haven't been the last week or so, we've been under 1,000. Before that, we hadn't been under 1,000 in the hospital since end of March, beginning of April. If you look at our ICU numbers, you know, it's less than 500, mm-hmm. Less than 400 actually. That is quite significant. Our infections, our deaths are in the double digits and in the low double digits. So that is a very good positive sort of upturn or downturn rather. Our infections, there has been a spike in the country in new infections. Sociologists think it's because people are out and about, you know, with social distancing and public health requirements sort of being lifted in terms of what people can do and where people can go. Also in close proximity during, you know, protests and things like that. I can't tell you sort of whether this is a little bump, a little peak, a short-term peak or not. So we'll just have to watch it. But what I can tell you is that generally there's a spike in cases and infections a week or two before deaths correlatively start rising.
Mm-hmm. And the medical reports that you get on the media will talk about 9 states that are increasing this or that, or 21 states that are holding this or that. And I just mm-hmm. never know which of those categories Maryland falls in.
So we have primarily been in the falling category, primarily. But in the last couple days, there have been some interesting things happening with the infection rate. I think the country in general is having an increase in infection rate, and because as one state opens, its neighbors go there, or bring it back and so forth. So I don't know what the long term impact is. It just might be a blip.
I just needed an overall picture. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
I have a question.
Yeah, Cindy.
It's not about COVID, though. It was about the convention.
Yes.
I did register 5 of my family members.
Excellent. I hope they live in Maryland, or you said they did.
Yes, they do.
Okay.
They live in Maryland. And my question was, if you have a list of names or anything, like, you can send it to me, and I can try to call and see if they want to be registered or...
Okay, so that is a great suggestion. So we pushed, and I see you, Debbie, if you want to unmute yourself, you'll be next. We pushed a hard registration sort of effort. Each chapter was given a list of current members or sort of, people we know who are maybe supporters who would come to mm-hmm. a convention or have in the past. And they were asked to, as compared with, you know, their members that have already registered. So we did a comparison. And then each chapter was supposed to make a concerted effort to actually contact these people. I know that some of the bigger chapters did. I know that Debbie was like a crazy woman with all her people that she was getting registered. I know that Sharon and Marguerite were working on at large. I know that Sharon and Graham were working on Central. I know that Elena tasked her board with working on Baltimore City. And so, you know, we have been working on this. Now, registration closed Monday. So we can't
get
anyone
right.
else.
Oh, duh. Yeah. I'm here if you need my help. That's all I was saying.
Oh, I appreciate it. And we will need your help. So registration closed. But what isn't closed, what's not done, is now that we've registered all these people, we got to get them to participate in the convention. And not everybody has the ability or wherewithal or technological knowledge to be able to do that. So we're going to be drawing from our members to help other people so they can participate.
The five people I register were family members, so, and they did say they would, you know, check it out here and there. I don't know if they'll be there every day, but
that's helpful. And you know, they could win the prize. They could win the drawing if Maryland wins. Alma, is this a follow up to Cindy?
Yes, it is. I was just going to say that I am under the presumption, which is risky, I know, that what closed is what we would typically call pre-registration, and that at the time of the convention, there will be time to register again.
Mm-hmm.
So what I understand, as I understand it, based on a leadership meeting that we had for all the state presidents and division presidents, is that registration is not pre-registration. It is straight up registration.
Oh.
And this registration that closed on Monday, if you did register, that entitles you to participate, but it also entitles you to certain prizes, door prizes, and other kinds of benefits of registration. People will still be able to participate in the convention when the convention happens, but if they are not registered, then they will not be, we're not going to do another sort of registration effort during the convention.
Okay.
So they won't be able to get like door prizes or stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just, it's technologically really difficult to simultaneously register people. Debbie.
Yeah, I actually did have a COVID question. I don't know if you know the answer to this, but I'm kind of just don't have a feel now for the people like that are getting it now. Are they healthcare workers? Are they more nursing home residents? Are they people who clean for a living? Of course, if somebody's going to admit I was out rioting, so I mean, that, you probably don't know that. But,
well, were you out riding on a horse? I mean, that's
rioting, I said.
I was going to say, I thought Debbie said rioting. That's why I'm
saying that's what I said. No,
I heard rioting. I was like, okay. Oh, rioting. Debbie was out rioting. Got it.
Yes. Go for it, Debbie.
You know, a little civil disobedience. Yep. Mm-hmm. So it's funny because in different states, there are some, you know, the first set of data that came in were the people who were actually protesting, having to wear face masks in the closures of, you know, states, right? Like they were the first people who trended upward and had a spike. It was the folks that were showing up and saying, nope, we are not, you know, you need to open this up. So they're, you know, protest, and then they got sick because they were in close proximity to each other. So we know we have data on that. That they have a high probability of contracting and spreading COVID to each other. Now that the states are starting to open, I think there's still a lot of tracing happening from what I've seen, and I do see some of this in my work. Nursing homes are starting to do better. Long-term care facilities are starting to do better, but there's still some, you know, outbreaks happening there. There are some things that may be related to like protesting and rioting, but there's not a lot of data on that yet because it hasn't been that long since all of that started. And then, but some of the, you know, first responders, healthcare workers, they're trending at the same level they have been trending all along. I mean, they're just going to always be a part of them that, because they're exposed so much, does potentially get it. We are still seeing older people tending to not be able to fight it as well. But there are also a high number of people in their 40s and 50s that are still also not able to fight it. Other questions? Okay, shifting gears about with regard to other kinds of stuff. So, got some events we want to tell you about. On Saturday, well, tomorrow, you know about the meeting tomorrow morning. The RT, whatever the heck they're called, MTP meeting, RTP meeting.
Regional transit plan.
Thank you. Regional transit. I'm like, is it transportation regional plan? Plan for regional transportation? Yeah, it's been a long day. So that meeting is tomorrow. We also have on Saturday an event that I think would be a lot of fun for people who are able to make it at 2 o'clock. We're having a workshop on memory, on how to exercise your memory and improve your memory. And the best example, I think, when Debbie wrote sort of the description is if you you're having trouble remembering all the Zoom codes, well, here's a way to figure out how to remember them. So that's at 2 o'clock. That's right here on this line. So the same phone number. The following week, Saturday, at 9:30 in the morning on the 27th, we will be having a workshop on Zoom. So it's how do you use Zoom right in time for the convention. We have our Carroll County chapter who did one for themselves. They practiced on themselves and they worked it out and it was great. And they are now going to be giving it to anyone in the affiliate and really probably anyone anywhere who wants a seminar on how to use Zoom as a participant on the phone, how to use it using the computer app, how to use it using the iPhone or iPad app, or the, you know, all the myriad of ways. And then also a short session, a short sort of segment on hosting. If you'd like to host your own Zoom meeting, what that would look like. So that is, again, 9:30 in the morning on Saturday the 27th. I want to get a sense from people. I have a conflict next week. The week after next. The first? And so I will not be able to be here. And so I want to know, do you want to have this meeting? And I'll ask somebody else to kind of lead it, probably some combination of Debbie and Ellen. Or would you like to just cancel it that week?
Am I unmuted? This is Aloma.
You are unmuted. She's just so used to muting her back.
I know. Well, I'm not so sure I feel strongly about having one on the first, but I would absolutely want one more than before National Convention.
Okay. So, and that's the other piece of information, I guess, that's good to have is Tuesday the 7th is Rookie Roundup. Thursday the 9th is the Maryland First Timers Convention meeting. And so I don't know how many people would be going to both of them, but us having a meeting on the 8th on the Wednesday would mean three nights in a row of NFB-ish stuff. Now, some of you are veterans, so you may not be going to either one of them, or you may be only going to the Thursday meeting as an ambassador, but want to make sure that you know that if we don't do the first, then we probably have to do the 8th, but the 8th is in the midst of these other two meetings.
I'm just thinking if I agree that that's three nights in a row, and this year pretty much everybody's a Rookie Roundup person because of the virtual convention, but
is there a way maybe to change it from Wednesday night to Thursday night the 2nd or something along those lines so that we can get one in before convention activities start?
Okay. I'm trying to think. Who's got meetings on the first whatever of the month? So the 31st is a Tuesday. There are no chapter meetings that day. The 2nd...
Yeah, there's no 31st in June,
There's no 31st,
oh,
yeah.
30th, sorry.
Ron's in another defense in there, okay.
Oh, sheesh.
Tell her, Debbie.
Mm-hmm. It's, Debbie, what you don't know is you've got a board meeting the afternoon of the 27th, so haha.
Okay, all right. Well, I can do it, but I'm going to tell you that I'm skipping... because I figured this is the best time to do it. You know, I if this goes on, which there's every indication it will, I'm thinking about whether I would see my mother again alive or healthy.
Oh, Debbie.
And so, you know, because she is 89 and she has had pneumonia once in her life at least. Mm. And but she is right now, you know, fairly healthy. So I am skipping town on the 26th to the 29th. Some kind.
Okay.
Joel has given me a ride to West Virginia because I sure as heck wouldn't take the train even if it was running. But
so no well, Debbie for the board meeting. Got it.
Yeah, well, I can be around. I can be on the phone for it though. It's in the in the afternoon, so I can do it. I can be on.
Okay.
I need to.
Yep.
So
all right. So well, thank you for letting me know. So let me take a look at maybe doing it on the 2nd. It doesn't look like there's a chapter meeting that meets the first Thursday of any month.
And I would assume that there's no presidential release that month since it's convention time.
Yeah, he usually doesn't do one anyhow, but we're not
correct.
Doing one.
Right.
Yes. I was thinking about that, and then I remembered he said nope.
Yeah,
so.
The only other people who meet at that time is my program, but I haven't seen any of my students come on anyway, so...
Oh.
Is it the national? Is it Maryland or is it the national one?
The Maryland students.
So maybe we can get the Maryland student. Maybe you guys can give a presentation at that meeting, and it could be your. We can combine the mentoring call.
Oh, that's an idea. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Cool.
I'll bring that back.
Because that would be fun, right?
Would be really cool.
Okay, so we'll work that out. All right, so then we're not going to meet on the 1st, but we're going to try to meet on the 2nd. We may or may not have a meeting on the 8th if people just want to check in. It won't be a formal meeting, but it could be a chill hour, a social hour. And we'll get started. Okay. Also, pieces of information. So shortly, we will be getting the list of people who did register. We won't know if Maryland beat the hell out of Texas or not, which we really hope they did, until the convention, because they're not telling us. But we do have a bet, Norma and I. And so I'm going to be very, very sad if I lose this bet. So let's hope that all of our effort worked out. And maybe it'll be Cindy's 5 that pushes us over. That would be great. Yeah, that's right. And I think the other stuff that we've been talking about sort of will hold because I know it's getting late. So any questions?
Are you going to be able to send out the phone number and both of their emails? Is that too much to ask to get that out tonight?
I will send out the presentation. I will send out the transportation plan, which I have, I think, or I will go get it. And I will send out the contact information. So there's a PowerPoint and the same information in Word that they talked about. There is their contact information in the website, and then I will pull down the transportation plan. I will send that all out this evening. Also, I will send out, because I did actually, I think it was Graham who sent it out earlier, so I will to one of the lists, Central Maryland list, I will resend in a separate email the contact information for tomorrow's meeting.
Thank you very much. I know it's getting late, and I hate to dump that on you.
Graham?
I sent you the contact information for the RTP meeting tomorrow directly to you and Sharon and Janice. So it only went to you.
Okay. All right. So I will send it to all of the lists.
And so
yeah, just forward that. That's easy.
And second, as talking about dates, I believe the parents of blind children are having a meeting on June 30th.
Okay. Well, we're not doing anything June 30th. So that's cool.
Just to let you know, I found out last night.
Oh, it's not June 31st?
So they're starting to do meetings, and they're trying to do that. So, yeah.
I think you missed that, Ronza.
Yeah. I'm sure I did. Look, it's been a long day.
It's okay.
I mean, this day started on March 15th and hasn't ended yet. All right, so it's now 10 o'clock. We didn't do a round robin. Let's just do a quick who's here or who's still here. So I'm here twice. I'm here on my computer and on my phone. Yay. Debbie, you got your hand raised.
Oh, okay, well, you have to lower it because I'm on the phone, so I can't.
Yes, that's right.
Ronza, you have to say your name. You can't just say yay me.
Yay me. My name is yay me.
I don't like the story Jamie told us earlier.
I'm Ronza, and I have never met any of you before. Aww. Okay, so Graham and Melissa just left the meeting, so apparently they didn't like that very much, and they're also going to look for June 31st. Aloma.
What?
Okay. Cindy.
I'm here.
Cindy's here.
Laura.
Yay, I'm here still.
Elena.
Hello.
Judy's here. When did you get here?
I've been here all the time.
Judy.
Oh Judy. Hi.
Hey.
Jennifer.
Yeah. I'm still here.
Tyron.
Yep, I'm still here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Barry. I'm here. Barry.
You may have bailed out.
He's here, but he's probably sleeping.
Probably is. That's Clarence. Clarence is always asleep.
That's true. It is Clarence.
Barry too.
Did you call me?
Clarence, wake up!
Wake up!
Yeah, it's wake Clarence. Up, Clarence.
I'm woke.
Is that Clarence?
That's Clarence.
It's me.
Okay, so Clarence is awake. Barry, are you awake?
Yes, I'm awake. Yes, I'm here. I haven't been sleeping. I guess we've muted.
Tracy?
She's going now. What do you want?
Tracy and the crew is here.
Okay. That's cute. All right, and I've got some phone numbers that I couldn't find numbers for.
Names for.
Yeah, I know four.
Yeah.
Ron is tired.
Phone number 2904.
Can you hear me? I cannot unmute myself. I am unmuted now. Okay.
You are unmuted now. Hi, who are you?
It's Linda Wellman.
Hi, Linda.
Yay. Hey, Linda. Yay.
Yeah, I don't know. What?
Star 6 mutes and unmute yourself.
Yeah, it won't work on my once again with my airstroke of technological brilliance. I know. I can do that on my phone, but I can't do that on my cell phone. I can do that on my landline, but
gotcha. All right, 3510.
Oh, that's Linwood. He's
Linwood, are you
sleeping? He's sleeping on the couch, yeah. He's on the house phone and he sleeps.
We weren't entertaining enough to keep him awake.
No. I still do it. I twisted it.
You guys, I had a really bitchy purple circulator driver today. It was nasty.
Are you okay?
Me? Yeah, I'm fine. She was awful. But I'm fine.
So I, you know, it's interesting, right? Because, like, I'm listening to you guys, and I was mostly listening, but also a little bit distracted renaming all of you. And then they go through their presentation, and I'm like, okay, it's MTA, you know, bureaucrats, blah, blah, blah. And then Sharon asked the question, and it's like, man, you're scary. I don't know if it's because, I mean, she puts that phone so close to her mouth that you can, like, hear her breathing.
Darth Vader voice going on.
Right. But then she's like angry. And so one of the things that I was telling her, she's super angry. She's been angry about this inaccessible plan. And I'm like, no, it is accessible. Like, they've told us it's accessible. I've talked to other people who said it's accessible. You must not be looking in the right place. Yes, I am. No, I think probably.
I wonder if what she meant was that, like, the link to the accessible document wasn't on the same web page as all of the other info, so you had to go digging for it, maybe?
That's nasty.
So, and that could be what happened. I'm just not sure.
Right.
I got distracted by her tone, so I couldn't see. I wasn't like, what are you saying? I was like, ooh.
then she takes it out on the brow writer.
And then she takes out her brow writer.
Don't pick on our Sharon now.
Oh, no. As soon as she called me, I'm going to tell her I talked about her and all these things. But then her braille writer is like, it's like a dinosaur pounding on a braille writer.
That's what I said. She took out her anger on a braille writer.
Right? And then she starts talking about the app. Sharon's never used the transit app in her life. And I'm going, really?
I pulled up the app store while she was talking about it and searched for a dedicated MARC train app. And
right,
I was like,
right. There is. So, but I just used the transit app fine, like a week ago.
Yeah.
While we were in the meeting, I pulled it up and I was like, I charted my route. I figured out how long it would take me to get as close to Sharon's house as I could, because, you know, she's in Howard County and MTA won't take me there. But, you know, it worked just fine for me. So I don't know what the problem is.
Yeah, but maybe this was a few years ago, but it works fine for me.
Yeah.
Well, there are several comments, though, that still needed to be added tonight, and we'll make sure that we get them in tomorrow. There's a bunch of things about reciprocity and community sharing and all of that cross
and certification
and
Audible.
There's a bunch of that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, there's a bunch of stuff that they've talked about using community partnerships to add more provider services for drivers and cross counties and none of that came up tonight. But that's all the stuff they talked.
Are you on the committee?
Yes.
Okay, I put you on the committee, but I didn't know if you actually showed up. Because I don't know if Elena sanctioned me putting you on the committee.
I was going to ask, does anybody know if there's any plan, since this is including Harford County, is there any plan to standardize schedules such that rides will be offered 7 days per week in all of these vicinities? Because Harford only has rides 5 days a week.
Oh, that's a good Aloma. You get on that.
Well, look, I almost said,
it's the same with Anne Arundel and Harford. They don't provide rides on weekends.
But look, you asked me if I'm on the committee. Yes, I went to that meeting and I've been on their list. And ever since then, they're talking about, well, we tried to get the word out and we're sorry this is such short notice before tomorrow.
I have not received one damn email from them in months. So they didn't try very hard to even let the committee people know.
No, no. I mean, are you on the state transportation committee?
Oh, I don't know. Probably.
So there's a committee that, like, have you been meeting about this plan? Were you meeting with that group about this plan?
Yes. Pam and I did, yes.
Pam?
In Howard County, in Columbia.
Pam? So from...
Don't
so
worry
it's,
about it.
Okay, I don't know.
Never mind. Don't worry about it.
Okay. I'm confused.
But
all
anyway,
right,
yes, I've been doing this.
Okay.
Give them hell.
So then, right, so I have these two phones on, and then I'm like, I have my computer, and then I have my phone, because I was learning how to use the computer app, really, as opposed to the phone, because the computer does more. And then, like, so then I know, back to making fun of Sharon, I come back, and I hear, like, I clue in again, and I hear, and I'm like, oh, Sharon has a question. And I sure do look, and her hand is raised. She's got the most powerful landline I've ever seen. So thanks for amusing me, you all, especially Sharon.
My bitchy purple ride driver today insisted that I absolutely had to board in the front of purple circulator because blind people and people with wheelchairs must board in the front.
You know, your purple blind driver needs to become Ty and Melissa's regular driver.
she was just nasty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, can somebody explain this to me? Why are people letting off fireworks?
I have no idea. I want to know that.
I don't know, but
they've
been doing
it
for weeks.
I keep thinking they're going to run out, but then they find more. What?
I'm not sure
if
it's legal.
People set fireworks off like all summer, like most of the summer. Where are they
getting them from? And why?
I don't know.
Just to make more noise, I guess.
Now look, okay, if you live in Baltimore City, you got PTSD. You hear a boom, you don't think it's a firework.
Yeah, exactly.
On the police scanner, a lot of times they get reported as shots fired, and the cops will say, it's the fireworks. I'm sitting right here.
Like, what are they accomplishing? What are they blowing off fireworks for? Like, what is the message?
Rhonda, that's way too deep for firework people. They don't go that deep.
Where do they get it from? I mean, they're
it's
not
the
working.
Same kind of people who bring air horns to every public meeting ever.
The people that have air horns, Elena, the people that have air horns, they've got some privilege, right? Like, they have the ability to buy an air horn and, you know, to sneak it in under their clothes and do all kinds of things. These people are just, like, random people that are just chilling out on the street, setting shit on fire. And it's like, is this Baltimore's way of being like not looting? We're going to be nice. We're not going to loot. So we're going to set off fireworks. Because that's how we're going to get our aggression out.
We're just going to make noise.
We're just going to make some cool lights and booms on the ground. That's
it's every night. Every night.
And
they don't even start at night. Like, you know, they start at 3:00 in the afternoon. I'm like, it's light outside.
Come to think of it, I haven't heard them tonight, actually, out my window.
Oh, I have.
I'm sure they're coming.
Well, they started it. They started at 3:00. And they'll start up again shortly. They'll start up again at like 11:00 when you want to go to bed.
Yep.
Did you guys, hear a funny...
This about your Purple Line driver?
Me? No. I was just going to say that
Did you guys see on the news that 12 cars caught on fire at the police lot today?
No.
Oh, wow. No.
On purpose?
Well, oh, yeah, I saw that.
I don't know.
I didn't see that one.
Yeah, I saw
Wow.
Well, I hope it was the actual police lot and not like the impound lot.
I'm sorry, we towed your car, it's going to cost you $67,000.
See, there was a configuration.
What is that noise?
I don't know. I don't think it's
somebody's fire smoke detector.
Oh.
No. How is that?
Either that or they're standing behind an MTA bus as it reverses.
I thought it was a fireworks from the distance.
Linda, I'm so glad you got on the call.
Yeah, Linda.
Oh, yeah, I am too.
She got registered, Linda.
Pardon?
I said, and she's registered.
I know.
So Sharon's not there anymore, right?
No.
On the line?
No, Sharon's not here, or else we wouldn't have talked smack about it.
Talking about it an awful lot if she were here. I wanted to thank her for her help.
Oh, she she'll be. I'll let her know, but you know she can call. You can call her, Mom.
This Judy.
Yes.
Can I ask a serious question?
No.
No.
Well, not for today.
Okay.
The reason I'm asking is because I know of a blind person who I heard had coronavirus, and his wife was trying to figure out where she could go get tested, but the only test sites she could find were test sites that you have to drive up to in a car and then wait there, and it's a complicated process. Somebody comes out to the car, and they... You know, they pick your papers, they make you wait, they do this and do that. Is there a way that we can look up where, are there any walk-up test sites that we can find?
So I just did this for somebody last week, and then they never answered when the Department of Health called them. But essentially, yes, there are alternative ways. If you get in touch with me and, you know, have this person get in touch with me, there are a couple different things. One is that the drive-up facilities are required to accept walk-up testers.
Okay.
The second thing is that, and they're supposed to have a place for them to be able to go there, but it does help if we can tell them in advance that they're coming so that way they're not surprised by it.
Yeah, right. I just don't think she knew. There's one close to me I discovered now, but I didn't, it's a complicated place to walk up to and get to. You have to park in a garage and it's very awful. So you better be able to walk up there.
So the other thing is that there might be people who just can't, for whatever reason, do that. So there are some mobile units in various parts of the state where the Department of Public Health is actually sending out people to neighborhoods, and they'll send them to your home if need be. But your doctor has to – your doctor has to essentially – certify that you need them to come to your home for that to happen.
Right, but you should be able to call them and be able to walk up to the same test sites that you drive up to.
Correct.
That's what I thought, but I...
Yeah, that's something that we worked out with the Maryland Department of Disabilities.
Yeah. We'll see. I'll tell her.
I was gonna say DOD knows about it, but I'll bet you Department of Health doesn't know about it.
So I know that the Department of Health does know about it. I don't know if the individual people in the Department of Health knows about it, because I was on a call with the Department of Health and the Department of Disabilities when we struck that deal.
Okay. Well, I'll test it. I'll test it.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm not going to get tested, but I have to have a doc. No, she wanted to go because her husband had it, so she really wanted to get tested.
Oh, so she's got exposure.
She did, yeah.
Yeah. So there,
she wasn't just being funny.
Is she symptomatic?
She was not.
Okay, that's good.
All right, well, anyway, we'll check it out. Okay.
That wasn't a funny question at all.
No, I said it was a serious question.
She said she wanted to ask the attorney a question.
I was hoping we could turn it
into
something
funny,
and there was just no... That's true.
Yeah, you meanies. Told me no.
I have one other question, too, about the corona stuff.
Okay.
And I don't know if anybody knows it or not, but like all those numbers that you were talking about, has anybody done statistical analyses to see whether or not, and I swear I know people are going to laugh at me when I say this, but has there been statistical analysis done to see whether or not they're significant or not, or whether, you know, whether they are real differences that would not be found by chance alone,
I'm sure there's lots of people doing statistical analysis on this. The challenge is that the data changes every day. Right. It isn't me. You know, that's the question for Al Manecki. He's probably doing it.
Yeah. For who?
That was Al Manecki. Sharon's husband. He's a big numbers guy.
Yeah.
Oh, I just wonder, like, when there's a difference of 100 people, does that mean anything, you know, or does it?
Big thing.
Well, it does that's insofar hard. As over time, right? Like, you have data. This isn't just a single incident, single date and time. It's over mm-hmm. a period of now we're going on, what, 14 weeks? Mm-hmm. Debbie.
So is this call, Rhonda.
Hey, ain't nobody holding you at gunpoint and telling you you have to do this. In fact, if you would like, I can help escort you off this call.
Uh-oh, she's going to mute you.
I'm no, sorry. I'm really wrong.
And she can put an email in and say, who kicked me off the damn call?
Oh, that was funny. I saw that. I couldn't believe
it. I'm sorry, Rhonda, but it was just way too easy.
Ooh, Debbie, I absolutely adore you, Debbie. No. That was the best one-liner I've heard in days.
What did Debbie say?
That is awesome, preaching. Oh.
So for those of you that don't know, we had a meeting on Saturday. We had a Sligo Creek meeting, and there was this one person who had a lot of background noise, and so I kept muting him, and he kept unmuting himself, and I kept muting him because he had all the background noise, and he would, and so we did this for about an hour. And so finally I muted him and said it so he can't unmute himself. He has to ask permission to be unmuted.
Oh.
Well, so he decided I kicked him off. So he left, and then he sent a nasty email to the Sligo Creek chapter, you know, cursing about who kicked him off the gym. And he was pissed off, and who kicked him off the damn Sligo meeting, and and then he sent like three of them. And bless her, Michelle Clark is like, maybe you don't want to bring this up in a list. and then Debbie brought the SmackDown, which made me very happy. Because when Debbie brings the SmackDown, woo!
What'd she say?
Oh, she told him that he was inappropriate, and he is not being inappropriate, and he can't use profanity on the list, and she's warned him before.
Good job, Debbie.
Thank you all. I'm going to sign out for now, personally.
Bye, Linda.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you all. Now you can all talk about my inappropriate question about the statistics.
Quick question.
Whether or not it was.
Pardon? That's just because she was in academia, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I taught statistics. Give me a
well, you're the only one that cares.
I know. Trust me, it's been many years. I know.
Linda, this is Amber.
What?
Hi, Amber. When did you get here?
Amber.
Hi. Take care.
I'm on and off. I had another call earlier, so I did listen to the MTA. But I had a question. When will we know who won for the most registrants?
for
at the convention.
Are you serious? They're gonna make us wait that long?
They are.
At the convention, yep.
Well, unfortunately, I actually have another two-part question. So I had people, of course, who came Johnny come lately, as they say, old school saying. People had told me after the 15th that they want to be registered, and I noticed that they did close it. So do you think there'll be another chance to register people, or do I just let you know about people who still want to be registered?
There will not be another registration, at least at this point. There's not a plan for reopening registration or having same day registration. They will be allowed to participate in the convention, but they won't be like registered, and they won't be able to get, you know, door prizes and things like that.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, because I asked people to, you know, check their emails for me, and then one person said he didn't get that through, and of course they told me Tuesday. I'm like at like 5 p.m. in the afternoon. I was like, and I told them, like, please let me know before the deadline.
I mean, we did send out everybody, and we asked chapters, we asked presidents to get to their people in whatever way they use. So I know National Harbor did not have a good presence on the first list I got. So I hope you got some more, because it was like you and three other people.
Oh, they said including myself I wasn't registered?
No, you were.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. Yeah, and then we found out that some people had, like, different names. That's when I found out when I called members. So it's like, so in other words, they didn't give us the real name, but when they registered, they had different names up there. So I was like, okay, that's new.
Well, I'm registered under three aliases, too, so I can get some more door prizes.
Good job, Jesse.
Yeah, up Maryland's numbers.
That's a good.
That's a great idea, Debbie. I wish I'd thought of that.
Because how can they prove it's not you? You and Mike Bullis, by the way. So Mike Bullis registered himself four times, and he's Michael Bullis, M. Bullis, Mike Bullis, and Mick Bullis. Okay. So then I get an email from him yesterday, and he goes, "Oh man, I got a bunch of my staff to register, but I forgot to register myself." I was like, "Who's left?"
Oh my gosh, I'm needing to laugh.
All right, guys. On that note, everybody make fun of Mike Bullis when you see him.
Will the real Mike Bullis please stand up? Exactly.
That's right. Okay. So, good night.
Good night.
Yep. Okay.
Night.
Night.
Yeah.